This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time. Don't hate me, but I'm going to begin with a bit of Brexit news that's breaking. The European Parliament has decided it will not be able to ratify any treaty before the end of December unless the deal is concluded by Sunday. So unless there's a final text on Sunday, then any treaty that's agreed will have to be provisionally applied from January the 1st, with the European Parliament giving its consent vote later. I would currently put the likelihood of a deal at 60%, 60 to 65, but you know me, I'm one of nature's optimists. Mystery Hour is now upon us. 03456060973 is the number you need if you have a question that is in dire need of an answer. A who, a why, a what, a where, a when, a whence, even the occasional wherefore. If there's something bubbling away in the back of your brain that is in need of satisfaction, then this is the place where you could find it. And similarly, if you're feeling a little bit chipper and knowledgeable, then you may have a chance to strut your intellectual stuff in the course of the next 55 minutes or so. So if you're not familiar with this feature, and I hope you'll enjoy it. It's one of my favourite things we've ever done, which is why I'm so excited about the thing I'm going to tell you about later in the hour, if I remember. Just describe it really as the radio equivalent of those pre-internet newspaper features that were so popular, when you'd write in and say, well, why do we do that? Where does that come from? What's the origin of this? What's the origin? How come anything at all that you think must have an answer, but you're damned if you know what it is? You're not allowed to look stuff up, obviously. If you hear somebody ask a question to which you know the answer, then you must then you ring in and tell us, but there's no point looking stuff up. I won't bore you with the genesis of the feature involving a celebration of knowledge, etc., etc., kids and calculators and all that malarkey. But it's just nice to know stuff. And it's oddly an increasingly redundant skill because we have so much information at our fingertips. So ring in with a question, or if you hear someone ask a question to which you already know the answer without consulting any references online or on paper, then ring in with the answer. The number remains the same throughout. 5 minutes after 12 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is underway. Fee's in Banbury. Fee, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Fee.
And thank you. The question is, why is it, after someone has died, they're referred to as late?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very good question. I thought sometimes I give myself a little moment for the cogs to turn, Fee. And then the hope that the three melons will appear across my forehead and the jackpot will come pouring out of my mouth. And I sometimes you feel you do know it, but if you can't remember it, then, well, there's a philosophical question for it. If you know something but you can't remember it, do you actually know it?
Yeah, I just can't think of why someone would be referred in that way.
No, nor can I. No. Okay, it's on the board. We shall find out for you. Someone will know. I like the we're only really allowed one or two etymology questions a week, but whether that gets filed under etymology, I'm not sure. No, it doesn't really, does it? Well, I don't know. Graham's in Bromley. Graham, question or answer?
Hey mate, how you doing?
All good, thank you. What's it going to be?
Is it true that we only use 10% of our brain? And if the person answering the question could elaborate on why there was so much space left unused, that would be...
Oh, hang on, you can't... You should have checked the first bit before you rang in. Shouldn't you?
Well, I'm not allowed to check, am I?
Of course you're allowed to check before you ask a question. You're only not allowed to check stuff before you answer one. So you could have checked, is it? Because we've all heard the line about how little of our brain that we use. So someone's just going to ring in and say yes. And they're not allowed to do anything else. You know the rules, Graham.
No.
I can't start slipping a supplementary under the wire on a cheeky Thursday, can I?
Well, it's happened once or twice before.
How dare you? It's nearly Christmas. Why don't we change your question then, in the spirit of Christmas, and say, why do we use so little of our brain?
Yeah, the whole idea of that was generally we use it or lose it. So if we never use it, how have we got it, you know? So.
Yeah, I'm more confused. Maybe I'm not using enough of my brain, but I'm more confused now than I was before you tried to make things clearer.
And obviously there's some obvious jokes about Brexit and leadership in this country, but we won't go there.
No, I also have a horrible suspicion, looking at the texts that are coming piling through to the studio, that that is a bit of a myth about the old 10%. So God knows what God knows what your question is going to end up looking like. But let's wait and see. Let's suck it and see, Graham. We'll see what people come up with on that. I might just call it Graham's brain question. Would you like to answer Graham's brain question? Because I'm blown if I know what it was by the time we'd stripped away some of the chaff. 0345 60 60 973 if you know the answer to Graham's brain question, or indeed if you know why we refer to deceased individuals as late, the late Elvis Presley, for example. Nora is in Glasgow. Nora, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Nora.
Why the expression Philadelphia lawyer? Why not Edinburgh, London, Chicago? Why specifically Philadelphia?
I've never heard that expression.
Have you not? Maybe it's particular to Scotland then.
Give me some context.
Well, for example, I'm working through something with a network provider for a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And my friend said the other day, my goodness, you need a Philadelphia lawyer to work that out.
Okay. No, I've never ever heard that before. Someone will know. We'll find out. I imagine it's going to be like, judging from what you've just said, it maybe Philadelphia had a much more complicated constitution than other states, and therefore to be a lawyer in Philadelphia, you had to be much more knowledgeable and much more informed than you did to be a lawyer anywhere else.
That sounds feasible, James. That sounds like a good answer.
I think you're right. I can't give myself a round of applause though, Nora, because it was plucked unprompted from my consciousness. But if that does turn out to be the right answer, then I shall have a spiritual round of applause. What a lovely question. Thank you. I never heard that before. A Philadelphian lawyer or a Philadelphia lawyer. The rest of the team. Keith, have you heard that before? No. You live and learn. Mohammed is in Uxbridge. Mohammed, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
Yeah, but I got a chance to fly to Dubai last week. So I'm just wondering, like, what's the height when you go and lose signals, or when you're just descending, when you're landing? Whereabouts can you catch signals? You know the height.
Well, it'd be the same vertically as it would be horizontally, yeah. Wouldn't it? So, how many miles away from a phone coverage? I suppose that's probably not true, because the lateral coverage is going to be like a lattice across the planet. This podcast is brought to you by Royal Mail. Search click and drop or download our app for postage that fits around you. Whereas when you rise upwards, so you want to know how high into the sky do you have to go before your phone stops working?
Yeah.
With the caveat that some planes have technology in place that means the phones never stop working, probably satellite technology.
Yeah, well, you need to pay them extra, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're not allowed to use your phone on a plane, are you? Or are you?
No, you're not.
I can't remember what planes are like anyway. It feels like so long since I went on a plane. Where are you? Did you say you were in Dubai last week?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you could have asked a hostess, mate. I don't know why you've rung me for this question. You could have asked the pilot. Which you'll find out. What height do you have to be, all things being equal, before your common or garden mobile phone would stop working on a plane? What is the origin of the phrase Philadelphia or Philadelphian lawyer? Graham's brain question, and the origins of the adjective late in the context of the deceased. Bina is in Chipend in Lancashire. Bina, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Do dogs have dominant front paws? One or the other?
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. You got a problem with that? You want more detail? You'd have to put more money in the slot. A few more coins.
Okay.
A few more coins in the meter, Bina, and I shall give... answer, yes, because we've done this before and I can remember about 80% of the answer. But
really?
Yes.
Okay.
So food, eating and hunting would be the ways in which you could probably determine whether or not a dog had a dominant paw. So I have a little cavapoo, if you pardon the expression.
So do I, actually. That's why I'm ringing.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. A little cavapoo. He's nearly 6 months old.
Oh.
And I've been watching him, and he has a little toy that you put sort of treats in.
Yeah.
And one paw is very much Muhammad Ali, and the other paw is a little bit Larry Grayson, if you like. So it just got me thinking.
One paw is a bit Muhammad Ali, and the other paw is a little bit Larry Grayson. Yeah, you might have alienated
honestly,
my younger listeners.
Yes. The left paw is Muhammad Ali and the right paw is a little bit Larry.
Oh, OK. Well, then you have actually answered your own question. Does he do the thing when he gets a scent, when he's out? Does he go up on one leg?
No.
He will do, probably, because ours does. Ours is three years old now, it's a bitch, not a dog. But the but she does this lovely thing, because she's only tiny. Ours is crossed with a miniature poodle. Is yours bigger than ours?
He's a bit bigger than that, actually.
Yeah. Ours is never going to really... Ain't, to keep the Elvis Presley theme, he ain't ever going to catch a rabbit. But she gets up when she gets a scent in the park. She's like a hunting dog. She gets up with the one paw ahead. Like, there's a phrase for it. I can't remember what it is. And it's always going to be the same paw. So yes,
right.
Qualifications.
Right.
Dr. Dog told me, who normally rings in on all dog-related questions, and also your own evidence, the evidence of your own eyes and ears, Bina.
Well, true, but I just thought I had this special little cavapoo. That's all. But
we've all. There is all cavapoos are special, Bina, but some
correct.
May be more special than others.
Absolutely.
Well, that's lovely.
Thank
that
you.
Hey, we could join it. We could start an owners' club. Round of applause for
Let's
me.
Do that.
Thank you, Bina. Take care. They're beautiful.
Do you know
people listening who've listened for a long time? There's that lovely lady yesterday in Finchley, all 16 years of listening and the journeys that we've been on together. I used to be a right old pain in the proverbials about dogs, and now listen to me getting all gushy with Bina about cavapoos. It is in the new book, actually, but only as a very trivial example of how I've changed my mind over our years together. Do you know what changed my mind began to make me realise what an idiot I'd been taking the mickey out of people who really loved their dogs? I used to say things like, yeah, you know, you probably have 2 days before it started eating you if you were to pass away on the sofa and stuff like that. And I'd say the people who love animals too much are people who aren't capable of forming proper, meaningful relationships with humans. I was a prat. I make no bones about it in many areas. But it was an email when I was embarking on one. Because you forget when you're doing all this funny stuff or ostensibly, allegedly funny stuff. You forget that it's real human beings. I think cyclists are probably the best example at the moment about broad generalisations that you forget are specific and hurtful. And I just got an email off a fellow who said he'd lost his wife 6 months previously, and if it hadn't been for his two dogs, he doesn't think he would have made it through. And from that moment on, I stopped. Literally, from that moment on, I stopped being... I nearly used an entirely inappropriate word there. I stopped being an idiot with regard to dog owners. And now look how far I've come, getting all starry-eyed with Bina about our little cavapoos. It's 12:15.
This is LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 19 minutes after 12, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue our mystery hour, our weekly adventures into the unknown. Let's go next to Lee, who's in Milton Keynes. Lee, question or answer?
Hello. Hello. Hi. You have to answer the question about the how far up can you be to get mobile signal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, all things given, if you have an antenna pointed up to the sky, you could have a distance of 32 kilometres. You could even potentially go more, but in the UK it's around 32 kilometres.
Qualifications?
I work in telecoms.
Okay, so that would work laterally as well, but on a horizontal basis you're more likely to have another...
Yeah, but the problem is that's considering you have one tower pointing at the aeroplane. You know, speed given and all that, it's far less than that. And the problem is you have so many towers talking vertically, the phone just can't decipher which tower it wants to speak to. And that's why in reality you don't get signal at 32 kilometres up in the sky. I suppose it's more of a theoretical question than a practical one.
Yes, well, I did. Yeah, I mean, it was. And your qualifications are you work in telecom, so it's a round of applause for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Right, nicely done. 21 after 12. Alex is in Amersham. Alex, question or answer?
It was actually an answer to the mobile phone question.
Hey, we've just done that.
Yeah, kind of. the answer is actually 32 kilometres, but I was going to give you the reason why it's 32 kilometres.
Well, then poor old Lee's going to feel bad, because he probably could have given us the reason as well, but I've biffed him off now.
Lee, according to your staff member, Lee actually said 7 kilometres, not 32.
But you just said 32.
I did, yeah.
But he just said 32.
Okay, I'll tell you why it is. I'll explain why.
Is anyone actually producing this mess?
No, but I help you out.
And also, there's another voice in your car. That's not allowed.
No, so she's just my partner. She's just sitting listening.
What do you mean she's just your partner? Honestly, there's no such thing as just my partner. She's just my current partner. Carry on then. Go on.
Okay, right. So the actual radio wave will travel, you know, several hundred kilometres. But the reason it's 32 kilometres specifically on the digital mobile network is because that is the time slot given for your mobile phone signal. For example, you have 30, say for example, we've got 32 mobile phones on one channel.
Yeah.
And it multiplexes, so it listens for each one in turn very rapidly.
And what's your partner's name, Alex?
Naomi.
Naomi, is he always this interesting?
Yeah, and he always makes a very short story very long.
I'll make it really quick. So basically, if you're further than 32 kilometres away, your radio signal travelling at the speed of light,
yes,
which is 186,000 miles a second, Oops. You will miss, if you're further, you'll miss the slot.
Right.
So the base station physically won't hear you because your signal won't have reached it in time.
Yes. Oh, God, finally, at the final little syllable there, it all fell into place. Where, Naomi, how dare you suggest that he takes too long to tell? That was a masterpiece of both brevity and clarity. That's what we need. We need more of that. Well played, Alex. Qualifications? Electrical engineer.
Electronics engineer, yes, absolutely.
Great. I'm going to give the round of applause to Naomi after you maligned her. Round of applause for Naomi. Happy Christmas to both of you. Make sure you pull over before you do anything like that in the car. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. I mean, ringing me and talking together at the same time, obviously. Jamie's in Cardiff. Jamie, question or answer?
Hi, first-time caller.
Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you. A little bit of a backstory. I'll be quick.
What?
I've been sitting on this question for about 6-7 months.
Okay.
And it hasn't hatched. Waiting to phone in. I've refused to Google it. Refused to...
When's the last time you had to buy stamps? I've just written a book and I'm in the process of sending out copies to various lucky recipients. But not only did I struggle to find a shop that sold any stamps of higher value than first class, but I also didn't know exactly how much I needed to send the package. Turns out none of it matters because buying postage online is easy with click and drop or with the Royal Mail app. Dropping off your stuff couldn't be easier too. There are now over 14,000 drop-off points, including 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, parcel post boxes. And if you'd rather not leave home at all, well, they'll come to you now with Royal Mail Parcel Collect. For more information, search click and drop or download the Royal Mail app.
Ask anyone else.
Okay, I like
so
that.
So Christmas time, I had a little factual book that sits in the bathroom for, you know, in the bathroom.
Of course.
And it stated that we have more bacterial cells living in and on our body than we have animal cells. And with the breakout of COVID happening, my question is, are there any viruses that are actually beneficial to us? Whether they attack other cells, dying cells in our body, or they attack bacterial cells that are no good for us? Just wondering if there are any.
I think it's a brilliant question. My only reservation would be that what the definition of the word virus is, because it may be. Because, you know, it's used always as a negative, so much so that we've even imported it into computer talk, haven't we? The idea that it might be, I don't know. It just seems unlikely, doesn't it? But that's why it's such a good question.
Yeah. And obviously with us sort of understandably at the moment, antibacterial, antiviral, everything, obviously that does have a small effect on the bacterial culture that lives in and on us. Mm. And whether it does have an effect with a viral culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Bacteria are good for us. I mean, the gut bacteria, I think, is going to be one of the big areas of medical inquiry in the next kind of 100 years,
definitely.
Personally. But yeah, I love that. So is there such a thing as a beneficial virus?
Yeah, it works symbiotically with us. Rather than infecting and causing harm, it infects and helps.
I love it. That's a great question. Okay, I can see why you're saying it. Why is it taking you so long to ring in with it?
just work and trying to get. I usually catch the end of Mystery Hour. And, yeah.
Oh, thanks, mate. I do 15 hours a week of this rubbish, you know. It's only just tune in for 20 minutes every Thursday. Honestly, talk about making a man feel unappreciated.
I have listened to pretty much the whole back catalogue of Mystery Hour on journeys and evenings and with my irregular work hours. So I'm a frequent listener, not.
You're very welcome. Better late than never. And now you can finally stop sitting on that question. Played havoc with your posture. Do we know whether there is such a thing as a beneficial virus, something that it gets into the cell? Because I think all viruses get into a cell, don't they? And actually does good or I don't know. And apologies to virologists if this isn't a very good question, but it is to us, which means it is. Ashley's in Bristol. Question or answer, Ashley? Oh, I think Ashley bottled it. Craig's in Stockport. Craig, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Craig.
I would like to know, as I've got one next to me at the moment in the car, why does oil become iridescent when it hits the ground when it's wet?
It's you mean multicoloured?
Yeah.
Isn't it
shiny and pretty?
Isn't it the same? Well, the shiny and prettiness will be the viscosity, the shininess of it, the glossiness of it. But isn't it just diffracting light or diffusing light? Isn't that what's happening?
Why do they do so many different colours? Just this one liquid does all different colours?
Because it's not the liquid. It's the light passing through the liquid that is made up of all the colours of the rainbow.
That's fair enough. It's why does it do that, though? Because the light
is passing through the liquid. The liquid is being... If you think of the liquid as a lens, the water and oil are different thickness of lenses, and the light passes through the oil on the ground or the oil on top of the water in a way that, I forget the correct word, whether it's diffuse or diffract, forgive me. And then that breaks down into all the colours on the spectrum, because light is made up of all the colours on the spectrum. So if you were to add water to the oil, at some point the colours would disappear because the thickness of the lens no longer is it kind of in the right place at the right time.
I'll go with that.
I think I'm right, but then if you listen to the programme, you'll know I always think I'm right, Craig. But Mystery Hour is a slightly different exercise. I think we both think I'm right. Am I right?
I reckon there's a clearer explanation out there.
Yeah, someone could possibly put it better. There you go. I'm glad that your natural kindness and good manners there were just giving me the impression that you weren't going to go away as a fully satisfied customer, Craig, but you were a little reluctant to say so, and I've tempted you into the open. You want more?
I would like a bit more, yeah.
Oh, all right, I'll give you a bit more. I'll get you a bit more, mate, seriously. That's fine. So why does the oil on the ground do the rainbow thing? 03456060973. 28 after 12. Squeezing one more before the news. Ashley's in Bristol. Ashley, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
If you're watching a film in English,
yeah,
and there's a character in it who's speaking a foreign language,
yeah,
and they swear, say a naughty word, does that go against...
I know where you're going. What a brilliant question.
Does that affect the film's rating in the UK?
So you've got. I know quite a few rude words in Greek. So,
yeah.
Oddly enough, I wonder whether Ofcom has the same rules as well. So if I start effing and blinding in Greek, would I get into the same amount of trouble with Ofcom as I would do if I started effing and blinding in English? I'm never going to find out that one, but hopefully we can find out yours. So if you had, for example, a French terrorist in an English language film, and the French terrorist started casting aspersions upon the maternity of all his enemies or accusing... I like it. Would that affect the profanity rating that the film then gets for an English audience?
Yeah.
Why do you want to know? What on earth have you got planned?
I was watching a Bourne Identity, so it's funny you use the French terrorist connection, and they were swearing in French, and I just thought, does that affect the rating? And then what happens when that film gets translated to a French audience?
Films and swears. I write down little aid memoirs to remind me what questions I've got left on my list. And yours is films and swears.
Yep.
There we go. Lovely stuff. Thank you, Ashley. 12:30 is the time. Bill Overton is here with the headline.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 606097.
one for the older listeners. After that hilarious description of the dog with one paw like Muhammad Ali and the other a little bit like Larry Grayson, do you know that on this day in 1978, oh gosh, on this day in 1978, Larry Grayson's Generation Game was on at 6:45 in the evening. Fantastic. Gag that, I thought, from Bina up in Lancashire. Just a lot of chuckling and tickling coming in. And it's refraction, not defraction. I knew I was going to get that wrong. You could tell from my voice, couldn't you? Diffusion or diffraction. And Craig very kindly sort of going, oh, yeah, all right, yeah. All right, I'll take that. And yet somehow conveying the fact that he was going away deeply unsatisfied. So we need to know. Why does oil create rainbows on the ground? Films and swears. If you swear in a foreign language in an English film, will that affect your rating, your PG or whatever they are these days? God, planes and cinemas. Feels like years since we were in either of them, doesn't it? Is there such a thing as a beneficial virus? What's the origin of the phrase Philadelphian lawyer? Graham's brain question. And why do we refer to the deceased as being late? Dan is in Montpellier. Dan, question or answer?
It is an answer to the beneficial virus question, James.
Oh, happy
days. Thank you for letting me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. Fill your boots.
There are things called bacteriophages, which are essentially viruses that kill bacteria in the human body.
Okay.
And they've kind of been used. They haven't really been developed particularly or looked into much in the West, but they were used as essentially an alternative to antibiotics in Russia and Eastern Europe over the past 50, 60 years or
really?
So.
What are they called? Bacteria wattages?
Bacteriophages, or just phages, P-H-A-G-E-S.
Oh, wow. Okay. And do they occur naturally, or are they laboratory created?
I believe they're made.
So it's a virus that would destroy a bacterial infection.
Exactly. They go into the body and they essentially use the bacteria that's causing a problem in the human body as a host and then destroy them from within. We kind of eat away at them.
Cool beans. And your qualifications?
I'm actually a journalist who specialises in the manufacturing of pharmaceuticals.
Oh, fantastic.
So I've covered this kind of on the fringe side of things because,
sure,
as I said, they're not really developing them in the West, although now that there are kind of problems with bacterial resistance, with antibiotics,
yes, of
they're
course,
starting to look more and more into it.
What's the definition of a virus then? Something that gets inside a cell?
Oh, God, now you...
Well, I know.
Now you're challenging me. I couldn't go definitive.
No, don't worry. But phages is... I mean, that's a brilliant answer. Give him a round of applause. Lovely stuff. Well played, Dan. Andrew's in Brentwood. Andrew, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's an answer about the colours that you see when you see an oil film,
yes,
on water.
Yes.
And one of the words you didn't use from reflection, refraction and stuff, it's interference.
Oh, really?
It's an effect you get when, particularly when the same wave gets split or reflected and you end up with two versions and they will either add together or cancel.
Right.
So in some directions, wherever you're looking at the surface, you get a different angle, and that will involve a different path distance through the film.
Yes.
Think of the trigonometry of it.
Yes.
And depending on the angle you're looking, you will either get enhancement or cancellation of that particular wavelength. So that you don't actually, they're not actually rainbow colours. They are different. They're subtly different. They're sort of brighter looking and different because they're not just the wavelength. They're a bunch of wavelengths which have been cancelled out. So you get these sort of complementary colours. This is why it looks so striking. The same thing happens with birds' feathers and some insects. They have that iridescence.
They do, don't they?
Peacock
feathers, actually, most obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's all to do with a layer on top of a reflection. And all that's necessary is that the amount of light reflected at the interface is similar. So you can get, a good cancellation.
Qualification?
A-level teacher, engineer.
Yeah, teach what? Physics?
Oh, sorry, physics.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not much easier for PE. Is it? That wasn't a slur on PE teachers. I'm just saying being a PE teacher wouldn't be a qualification for giving me an answer on interference between lights. That was all.
No, but everybody's rude about PE teachers.
Yeah, well, I'm not. I wasn't being rude about. But you know, there was a teacher in my school. There was a teacher at my school who was a PE teacher, and then he did an Open University degree, so he could be a geography teacher as well.
Yeah.
And he was, I'm not going to say it, it wouldn't be fair. Because so many people.
I know a guy who taught physics and PE as well. So,
You go. So you're the one that's giving. Why are you giving it large to PE teachers? You and your
nasty
physics crew. Round of applause for Andrew. Reason not giving away identifying features live on the radio. It's a bit late for that now, but I don't know if you're listening the other day when I got a bit nostalgic about a lad I used to know whose family had a farm. And I told you that when I was about 11, I used to get, I had about two jobs at home. When we got a dishwasher, emptying the dishwasher was something me and my sister had to do. And then it was my job to go out and get the coal during winter when we were having fires. But I'd go to my mate's farm and he was like a one-man industrial unit. The amount of things he had to do, even when he had what we now call a play date with me, he would still be chopping wood and doing all sorts of jobs. And I mentioned it, and I mentioned the village where the farm was near my home in Worcestershire. And someone recognised who I was talking about. It was really, really lovely. And so got in touch, and I'm going to record a little birthday message for him some 37 years after we last saw each other. Which is, I love radio, don't you? That's why radio is so magic. It really is. 12:42 is the time. Dominic is in Tunbridge Wells. Dominic, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
To Philadelphia lawyer.
Yeah, all good, yes.
So the Philadelphia lawyer is actually a lawyer from Philadelphia, and his name is Andrew Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
And he defended a very famous case in the early 1700s, so I'm going to say about 1740, of a German immigrant called John Peter Zenger.
You've looked this up.
No.
You can't remember his name. John Peter Zenger. Okay, no, maybe you can.
It's a very important case because it establishes the use of defence as a truth as a defence of libel.
Okay.
You can't be. So it actually is a very significant case. And John Peter Zenger, if I remember, published a thing called the New York Weekly Journal, or New York Journal, where he aired grievances against residents of New York against its governor, whose name was William Cosby, not that Bill Cosby.
No, that would be.
And because the governor was very powerful, he put him in prison for a while. And Andrew Hamilton defended him. And his argument was that the jury are able or cognizant to decide whether what he published was true. And therefore, if it was true, it could not be malicious. Therefore, he was acquitted. I think it's about 1740, something like that.
Yep.
And it basically means that if you you cannot be guilty of libel if what you say is true. And that's why it's important. And the interesting thing about the Philadelphia lawyer as a phrase is its meaning changes depending when you quote it from. So if you say it was from about 1800 onwards, it meant you were very competent and very diligent.
Oh, yeah.
But in the second half of the 20th century, it means that you are a slimeball or a sleazy lawyer. So it actually changed across the meaning. For it.
Well, you live and learn.
It's
qualifications.
I studied law at A level about 30 years ago, and my paper was on libel.
Fair enough.
My thesis was libel. So it's an odd sort of phrase, but the reason that you know it is because Andrew Hamilton is from Philadelphia, and that's where the phrase came from. So actually, I did write a reasonable chunk of my paper on it. I did have to rummage through the cogs, as you say, for 30 years ago, but it has stuck in my mind.
And there it was. Happy days. Round of applause for Dominic.
and taking us right up to the 12:45 as well, which is lovely. Just a quick word for Wayne in Basildon, because he gave us a scoop earlier this week. Surprised he hasn't been banging on about it endlessly, but he's been in touch. He says, you're nearly 50. No, I'm not. And it's 2020. You got that right. It's unacceptable for you to deploy the term cool beans. You are not a teenage girl and it is not 2005. Yeah, all right, mate. 12:45.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. There's not a lot left, actually. I'm surprised no one's had a crack at the reason why we describe deceased people as late. You know, the late Elvis Presley, the late Margaret Thatcher, whoever it may be. I thought that was quite straightforward, but it's an odd one, that. That one's slipping out of reach for me. Sometimes when people ask questions during Mystery Hour, I know the answer, but I can't currently remember the answer. If I were to ring in next week, there's no Mystery Hour next week. That would be my question. Do you still know something if you've temporarily forgotten it? It's a bit like not being able to find it on your computer disk, but it is still there. So I know, like names, for example. When you can't remember someone's name, no one reminds you, but the next day you can remember their name. Did you know it somehow in some sense? Sorry, we're not doing philosophy. Ooh, philosophy hour. Keith's shaking his head. And thank you, Gary. You're right. I have forgotten completely to tell you the thing that I might have forgotten to tell you, the thing about the thing, the thing, the thing, the thing. Shall I tell you now at 10 to 1? Yeah, go on. It's just something to get a little bit. It's not for this Christmas, for next Christmas. You'll be able to play Mystery Hour in the comfort of your own home as things stand. We're bringing out a game, a board game, a Mystery Hour game. How, imagine that. Was it Tracy in Finchley yesterday? She really touched me when she talked about having been listening for 16 years and I've been listening to you for 16 years. And when we started out on this journey, I'm not resigning or anything. It sounds like I'm doing a farewell message. There was a fraction. There was hardly any. I mean, it was a tiny, huge radio station in the hearts of many Londoners, but objectively it was tiny. We had a consultant come in who I really liked, and I think we had about 150,000 listeners at the time, and she said, you should be aiming for 1 million. And I thought she was crackers. I genuinely thought so. But you sit there, because, you know, my kids need shoes, and I wanted the job. And I go, yeah, absolutely, we should be aiming for 1 million listeners. And I thought, she's absolutely off her rocker. And then, of course, a couple of years ago, we sailed past the 1 million mark. And now Mystery Hour, which began as a ludicrous and slightly tongue-in-cheek attempt to fill an hour of radio on Thursdays when there were elections because we're not allowed to talk about the news. Mystery Hour will be in all good sort of toy shops and bookshops near you at some point next year. How amazing is that? It really is. With a whopping great picture of me on the box. What more? Could your toy box wish for? And as regular listeners to this programme will know, there is only one way with which such astonishing Mystery Hour related news can be greeted. And that way is this. And I think I might give myself one of these.
I'm Ray Liotta and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Thank you very much. Well, obviously, I couldn't have done it without you. I'd like to thank my producers. I'd like to thank my studio engineers, my director. Nah, it's rubbish. It's all me, Mystery Hour. And you, of course. 12:52 is the time. We'll be giving some away once we finally got the kit and caboodle in place, no doubt. But it's just waiting to dot the I's and cross the T's, and then it will be action stations. But I wanted to tell you this year rather than next year, so that whatever you get for Christmas, there'll be a little bit of you that's thinking, oh, damn, I wish I'd got the Mystery Hour board game with a big picture of James's noggin on the box. Rajiv is in Ealing. Rajiv, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I wanted to know why we don't greet people with a good night. We say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, but we don't say good night as a greeting. We say good night as when we leave or say goodbye, we say good night to people. And when I was a kid, I remember thinking, why don't we say good night?
When we say hello.
As a greeting. And I thought, oh, just one of those things. We just say good afternoon, good evening, and good morning.
Good afternoon.
But then some years ago, I saw...
Good day. Don't forget our Australian friends.
G'day. I saw the BBC dramatisation of Charles Dickens' The Signalman. And I remember watching
The Signalman?
In that story, the signalman at night time meets the stranger that he talks to. They greet each other with a good night.
Oh.
The man says to him, good night, sir, here is my hand. And then the signalman says, good night, sir, and here is mine. And they go off and have their meeting and talk in the signal box. So I'm thinking, so they apparently they used to greet each other.
Oh, well, like that. So, I mean, I think you've probably answered your own question. Is it just, it's the same reason we don't say gadzooks anymore. It's just fallen out of fashion.
Oh.
Hasn't it? Well, sorry, mate. You actually don't sound so downcast. What were you expecting by way of an answer? The Spanish Inquisition?
No, I thought it'd be.
Well, there's not going to. There's not going to have been a law. No one's going to have woken up like William Gladstone said. You're no longer. I shouldn't do this. Every time I do this, I end up looking like a Muppet. But I think it's highly unlikely that Disraeli or Gladstone turned around and said, "You are no longer allowed to greet each other by saying good night," which means that it must have just fallen out of fashion, or it must have.
Yeah, it just sounded so logical that because we say good morning, good evening, and we don't say good night anymore. But I thought that was the most logical thing, to say good night when you see someone at night time.
Yes, I know I do. But the question is, why don't we do it anymore? And you, by telling us that we used to do it, I would say that you'd almost certainly pushed the it's simply gone out of fashion answer over the line. But I'll leave it on the board for the next 4 minutes.
Right, excellent.
Unless you want a round of applause now for answering your own question, but I sense if I gave you that, you'd go away unsatisfied, and I never send anyone away unsatisfied.
It's up to you.
Oh. No, leave it. Come on, someone ring in and answer, because Rajiv wants more than I can provide. 03456060973. Hassan is in Edinburgh. Question or answer, Hassan?
It's Zach. Hassan's my last name, but it's an answer about the virus question.
Carry on, Zach.
So the vaccinia virus, so we're talking about vaccines, and the first vaccine that was invented, which eradicated smallpox, was actually a virus. A really good example of a helpful virus. There's also a theory about the human placenta, you know, the womb.
Yes.
That the genes that might have allowed that to evolve came from viruses as well, but that's not proven. But we definitely know that there's some retroviruses which can regulate the expression of human genes, and that might be playing a role in evolution.
Love it. Qualifications?
I'm a junior doctor, 2 years post-qualification.
Thank you for all that you do. And so you're not challenging the last answer, you're merely augmenting it.
Yeah, I just thought that there was more to be said about that. You know, there's a whole complex.
Yeah. No, well, bringing vaccines into it is timely, topical, and fascinating as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about vaccinia is that we're not actually really sure where it came from, because
really?
It doesn't actually match the cowpox vaccine, so the cowpox virus that we think it came from. So there's a bit of a mystery there as well.
Fantastic stuff. Round of applause for Zach. Thank you, mate. 12:57, so we've got films and swears and Graham's brain question left, as far as I can tell. Lauren's in Ealing. Lauren, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So this is for the brain question. So we actually do use all of our brain. If we didn't, it would be smaller, because it takes a lot of energy. And so even the grey matter has a certain type of neuron in it, which is different to the white matter, and they all are used. I think that the 10%... the myth maybe come from the fact that we don't use all of our brain at once. We use specific neurons that trigger other specific neurons in certain pathways. But actually, we do use all of our brain at one point, even just doing one day.
That'll do nicely. Qualifications?
So I did a neurobiology module in my degree in biochemistry.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Lauren. And that is just... Graham, the films and swears. So we just need a Hollywood actor to ring in, and then we've actually cleared the board. So how long have you got? You've got 54 seconds. If you are watching a film in the English language and it's full of foreigners swearing or characters swearing using foreign swear words, does it affect the... and the goodnight question as well. Oh, poor old Rajiv. I sent him away without a round of applause. And that... excuse me. And now I'm learning that they still use good night as a greeting in the Caribbean. St. Lucia and Jamaica have been suggested to me as places where it still happens. And even in Scotland, you say good night when we leave others to head off. No, that's not the same, Anne. That's what everyone does. Good night at the end when you're parting, but not the same as good morning, good day or good evening. And we wanted to know why why it wasn't. But that is it from me for another day. We'll be doing it all again tomorrow morning from 10. I can't believe I remembered to share my exciting news with me, with you. That must be the first time I've ever pledged to do something at 10 o'clock that I haven't forgotten to do by 1 o'clock. The next voice you will hear on this radio station belongs to Sheila Fogarty.
There's no point sharing the good news with yourself, James.
That's a good point.
You have to share it with other people.
This is very true.
And did people ever really say gadzooks?
Yes.
Did they?
Oh, yes, at my school.
Oh, good, good Lord. Gadzooks. I might start doing it myself. Thank you. I like it. Thanks very much indeed. Now, more parts of the east and southeast of England are to be subject to the toughest coronavirus restrictions. From midnight on Saturday, the Health Secretary announced not long ago. Let me just tell you who you are. Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire, Berkshire, Hertfordshire and parts of Cambridgeshire, Surrey, East Sussex and Hampshire. Kent is not in a good place when it comes to infection rates. We know that Manchester was hoping to come out of Tier 3, Greater Manchester, and it has not by the looks of things. So we'll get reaction to all of that, not least from you. But with that Tom Cruise rant in mind and with the Christmas plans in mind, do you understand what's going on? And are you going to be prepared to challenge, not necessarily cruise style, but are you going to be prepared to challenge those who break the rules?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.